You guys doing all right today? Okay, it was a little quiet. You guys doing okay? All right, good. Okay, it's good to see everybody. Hopefully you're starting to come back from vacation and stuff, and it's really good to meet some of you guys who are new. My name's Carter, and I'm one of the pastors here at Redemption Church. If we haven't met, I'd love to talk to you and get to know you a little bit more, but glad you're with us today. So I want to start by telling you a story. Maybe you might, most of you should remember this. It was, incidentally, the year was 2009, the year that Tamara and I were married to one another, so 15 years ago. And when we heard about the financial investor named Bernie Madoff, who was, arrested and pleaded guilty for charges of fraud, money laundering, and other crimes, he was sentenced to 150 years in prison for orchestrating the largest Ponzi scheme known in human history, basically. $65-plus billion worth of losses affecting individuals, charities, pension funds worldwide, all of this kind of basically financial chaos because of this. It was around, the 2008, then 2009 recession. And so, if you don't know, a Ponzi scheme is one of these financial cons where early investors are repaid with money acquired from later investors rather than actual investment income. Because when you invest, you're supposed to be able to make money on the market, and whoever you invest with is supposed to be making that money for you and then giving you those returns. But a Ponzi scheme is where you're not making any money. You're just taking, the Ponzi schemer is taking the money from those who invest later and giving it back to the early investors so it looks like they've been making returns. And usually what they do is promise outrageous returns, 10%, 20%. Some of them, Ponzi was, when the original Ponzi schemer, who it's named after, was promising 50% returns. And it looked like that when you were getting money from later investors, giving it to the early investors, but it's all a fraud. None of it's real. So it's very interesting that, Madoff did this for about 20 years. I mean, since the 80s, he was doing this. Nobody caught him. He looked like this, financial advisor, investor on the front end, very prestigious. People knew him. He was like a market maker. I mean, everybody knew him on Wall Street, and all on the back end, in the background, where people couldn't see, he was a fraud. He wasn't doing anything with their money. He was actually stealing from people, using their investments to get jets and houses and all kinds of stuff for himself. And so in 2008, he got caught when the recession hit and he couldn't hide it any longer. And it all came out that none of it was real. And here's the point that I have for you in telling you and reminding you of that headline from 2009, way back in the day now. Whenever you make an investment, you want to make sure you're investing it with somebody who's trustworthy. That makes sense, right? That's actually Jesus' point in the parable that we're going to see today in Luke. But with an eternal perspective, we're going to talk about, investment strategies today, but not in a physical, material, or financial sense. Jesus is going to teach us the joy of multiplying his kingdom, his eternal kingdom, now. How do we do that? Well, we invest. We invest our faith. So we're going to be in Luke chapter 19, verses 11 through 27. If you want to turn there, find it on your Bible app. You can also turn to page 16 in your booklet. Hopefully you still have this around. If you don't have one, grab one on your way out today. Love to give that to you. But you can take notes in here, page 16. It'll share with you what we have coming up next week as well. But if you like to do that kind of thing, there it is for you. And if you've missed a week so far in this initiative, I just want to really encourage you to go back and listen to the other two sermons that we've had so far. Because I really want you, if this is your church home, to be locked into this initiative with us. Go listen to it on our podcast, listen to it on our YouTube channel. Because we have some goals here that we all need to go toward if this is your church. We do have a goal to raise $181,700 by the end of this year, above and beyond our normal giving. And that's important for us if we want to get into the new location, the new building, and move into that new location when it comes up. And just to give you a quick update, I talked to the GC on Friday. He said, don't hold him to it, potentially 3 weeks away from them being done. I was like, okay, well, that's interesting. Time will tell, right? We'll see. Apparently, the elevator for the space is sitting out in the parking lot over here in a big bin, if you happen to look over there. So you can see it. They're getting ready to start installing it this week. So we'll see. $181,000 essentially is what we feel like it's going to take for us to get into that building by the end of this year. We need to raise that money. It's going to help us do that. It's going to help us be financially stable. But really, we have a more important goal, and I do mean this. It really is more important that 100% of us participate if this is our church home, because we are all on mission together, are we not? So if you call this your church home, I really want you to participate with us in some way, shape, or form. Go all in on the initiative, because if you're committed to the mission and vision, then our primary desire is for you to grow in your faith and in maturity, ultimately so that you can invest it in Jesus. And that's going to be the main point for today. If you're taking notes, you want to write that down. Invest your faith in Jesus. That's what we're going to see from the parable. That's our goal for you. That's our hope for your heart, is that you will invest your faith with Jesus. Because faith is really the only thing that we bring to the table in the Christian life. You know, it's the only thing that we bring. Either we intentionally and actively trust in Jesus, or we don't. When we do, that's faith. When we don't, that's something else. It's a lack of faith. We're putting our faith in something else. So we looked at two stories over the last couple of weeks that exemplified this. Zacchaeus, the rich, wee little man, you remember Zacchaeus, he was a tax collector, and he chose to invest his faith in Jesus ultimately, despite his wealth. And he was willing to invest everything, not just some of it, all of it. He gave it all back because he knew that Jesus was trustworthy. So he saw the eternal benefits and the eternal returns. But then last week, we contrasted him with the nameless rich young ruler who was also wealthy, but he was this religious hypocrite. And he wanted to walk away from Jesus because of his wealth. He had too many possessions. He was self-righteous. And so he rejected trusting in Jesus over trusting in his money or himself or whatever it was that he was trusting in. Why did they each have such radically different responses to Jesus? What had to do with who they were willing to trust? Had to do with where they were willing to place their trust. So today we're going to look at one of Jesus' parables that pushes us not only to make the choice for ourselves, but to see how that impacts the rest of our lives. Is Jesus trustworthy or is he not? And if he is, how does that impact the choices that you make and the way that you live your life and the way that you view the world? Unfortunately, people's faith in Bernie Madoff was unfounded, right? I mean, for years and years, it looked like he was trustworthy. He ended up not being trustworthy at all. They made bad investments with him. Some people didn't even realize they were investing with him and couldn't help it. He was untrustworthy. But today we're going to see that Jesus says he is trustworthy. And you can take it to the bank, so to speak. So we can invest our faith and our very lives in him. And when we do, he will use that to multiply his kingdom. And we get the joy of participating with him in it. That's the beauty of the gospel, is that we get to be with God and participate in building the kingdom through the investments that we make by faith. So we simply have to come to a place where we choose whether we're going to trust him or not. Is he trustworthy or is he not? So let's get into the text today and see what God wants to teach us here through Luke chapter 19. We're going to start in verse 11. This is what it says. Crowd was listening to everything Jesus said, and because he was nearing Jerusalem, he told them a story to correct the impression that the kingdom of God will begin right away. Now, just for some context, we're still in this season. I told you a few weeks ago where Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem, essentially on his way to the cross. He's getting ready to be crucified here. And he's had interactions with multiple people, but we've seen the interactions he had with both Zacchaeus and the rich young ruler right before this. And now as they're nearing Jerusalem, he sees this misunderstanding that's cropping up among his followers about his kingdom coming now. He wants to correct that. Most Jews at the time thought that once the Savior came, that was game over then. It was time. The kingdom had come and was coming. The Messiah was coming to bring salvation right then. And while it had come in part, Jesus says, he doesn't want them to think it's come in full yet. The kingdom will come in its fullness eventually when the king returns. And so that's why he tells this parable. The king has to come back. For now, Jesus wants them to prepare to live a certain way in between the times. So in between the time of Jesus' first coming and in between the time of his second coming, when he comes back as king to bring the kingdom in fullness. So he's telling this story to help correct that. He's in verse 12. A nobleman was called away to a distant empire to be crowned king and then return. Before he left, he called together 10 of his servants and divided among them 10 pounds of silver, saying, invest this for me while I'm gone. Now, this is interesting because you'll notice that the parable has a lot of parallels to Matthew's gospel and the parable of the talents, if you recall that, maybe the better known parable, at least to us. We studied it last year. And so if you've been around, you have some kind of foundation for that. This is a little different. There are some differences here. People are like, well, why are there differences? Well, Jesus was a traveling preacher. You know, I mean, he probably used the same illustrations over and over and over again, probably a lot better than I do. You've probably heard some of the illustrations even in this sermon that I'll make again. But Jesus is using this as another way to communicate something that he wants to get across. And there are some differences. That's what's important here. The nobleman's going away to become the king. That's one difference. But before he goes, he gives 10 servants a pound of silver each. So they get the same amount. That's different than the parable of the talents as well. And depending on your translation, it probably says they get a mina or a mina. I like mina. I think mina sounds better. I think that sounds more, you know, Greek. I don't know. That's just how I'm going to say it. So they get minus, all right? M-I-N-A, which is approximately a pound of silver, as we see in this translation here from the NLT. And then he tells them, which is another difference, invest this for me while I'm gone. So he gives the servants all the same amount, and then he gives them specific directions. Invest this while I'm gone. Verse 14, but his people hated him and sent a delegation after him to say, we do not want him to be our king. That's really interesting too. Another difference. But this is an aside. Clearly, he's the nobleman, and the delegation are the religious Jewish leaders that don't want him to be the Messiah. They don't want him to be the Savior King. But to their chagrin, he's going to become the king anyway. Verse 15 says, after he was crowned king, he returned and called in the servants to whom he had given the money. He wanted to find out what their profits were. So let's just go on with the rest of the story. The first servant reported, Master, I invested your money and made 10 times the original amount. Well done, the king exclaimed. You're a good servant. You've been faithful with the little I entrusted to you, so you'll be governor over 10 cities as your reward. The next servant reported, Master, I invested your money and made 5 times the original amount. Well done, the king said. You'll be governor over 5 cities. But the third servant brought back only the original amount of money and said, Master, I hid your money and kept it safe. I was afraid because you're a hard man to deal with, taking what isn't yours and harvesting crops you didn't plant. You wicked servant, the king roared. Your own words condemn you. If you knew that I'm a hard man who takes what isn't mine and harvests crops I didn't plant, why didn't you deposit my money in the bank? At least I could have gotten some interest on it. Then turning to the others standing nearby, the king ordered, take the money from this servant and give it to the one who has 10 pounds. But master, they said, he already has 10 pounds. Yes, the king replied, and to those who use well what they are given, even more will be given. But from those who do nothing, even what little they have will be taken away. And as for these enemies of mine who didn't want me to be their king, bring them in and execute them right here in front of me. Okay, so there we are. What does this story mean for us? There's a lot going on here, and the underlying point of the parable is about investing our faith in Jesus. So that's the underlying point. If Jesus is the nobleman, and the religious leaders are the delegation that hated him, didn't want him to be king, then the servants represent those of us who claim to be his followers, people who are his servants, his kingdom followers, we'll say. So Jesus is saying that he gives all of his followers something. In the story, it's money. It's a sum of money. And he tells them to invest that thing that he's given them so that they can get a return on their investment that goes back into his kingdom. Notice how it's his money that he gives, and he tells them to invest it so that it will grow and multiply so that it'll be for his kingdom when he returns. And that begs the question then, and this is how we'll structure our time here. I'm going to ask a series of questions throughout this talk. The starting question is this: what has Jesus given us to invest? That begs the question. What do we have? What do we have to invest? Well, he gives his followers something to invest, money here. There's a lot more going on than just a pound of silver or a mina, which basically equal to 3 to 4 months of wages, perhaps. No small sum, maybe, you know, $15,000 to $20,000 in our day, perhaps. Something like that. So he's giving them something important. What does it represent for us? Well, it represents anything in our lives that helps us know God and make him known to the world. That's what this represents for us. Anything that we have that he's given us that helps us know him more or helps us make him known to the world. That's probably why everybody in the parable gets the same amount in this case. It's not like the parable of the talents that's making a little bit of a different point. He's saying in general, we all have something that he's given us. We all have something to know him and make him known to the world. Now, I don't think it's a secret thing that we have to figure out either, like so many people tend to think that it is. It's not hidden, in other words. You don't have to find it. These are things that God's given you. They're very apparent in your life. You probably don't have control over them. They are just things that are about you or about your circumstances. They've been given providentially. They've helped you know God and make him known to others over the years. For example, maybe it's the family you grew up in. Maybe that family shared the gospel with you, took you to church, and introduced you to Jesus. You didn't have control over that. But that's something that God gave some of you in order to know him and make him known to the world. Or maybe it's the country that we all live in right now, where we have the freedom to worship God the way that we see fit, without fear of torture or persecution. You're like, yeah, persecution. Well, okay, go to China. Okay, I'm just saying. We have freedom here that people don't. We're sitting here in freedom. So maybe it's that. Maybe it's also an experience that God's given you that's helped shape how you are today. Maybe it's something that you didn't even like. Maybe it was something that was hard, suffering, but it happened to you without your control, but it's made you who you are. Or maybe it's the personality you have. Maybe it's the skills that you have. It's a gift. It just comes naturally to you. These are things that you can't control, and yet they've been given to you by God to invest in his kingdom. All these and more can contribute to you knowing and making him known to others. So you're to invest those into the kingdom. And obviously, all these things aren't the same in everyone's life. So I don't think that's what he's trying to say here, that you know everybody has the same amount. That's why he gives the one who has 10, he gives him more. You know, that's why he gives him more cities at the end. And the one who has 5, he gives 5. So there is some level of ability here. Are we in control of that? Not necessarily. But I don't think that's the point of the parable. The idea is that we all have something that has been given to us to invest. And so at our church, we use 3 big buckets to describe what those things are. 3 big buckets are time, talent, and treasure. We've all been given time, talent, and treasure by God to invest. That kind of sums up our whole life, right? Time, talent, and treasure. All the things that we have in our life that can be used to multiply God's kingdom. Time is the focus of our lives. What we do every day, you know, every week, every month, every year. How do you spend your time? How do you spend your retirement if you're retired? If I asked you what the most important thing is in your life, if you're a Christian, I'm sure that you would say Jesus, right? But what does your calendar say? Would it agree with you? You prioritize what you value. So how you spend your time, does that show that you prioritize Jesus? But then you have talents. And talents are those skills and gifts that we have that others might not. Maybe we could call this our energy. So what do you invest your energy in? What do you do with the skills and talents you have? Are you using them as an investment in the kingdom of God? I mean, your career should be a part of this probably. Maybe you're good at what you do, and so you have talent there. Do you use that for yourself or for a paycheck, or do you use it for the kingdom of God? Maybe you're like, well, it could be both. Yes, yes. But what's your ultimate goal? Is it to glorify yourself and build your own kingdom, or is it to build God's and glorify him? But then your treasures, of course, are your money and your possessions, the things that you have, your material things, the treasure that you have. Where are you investing and spending your money? Your spending will show you what you value the most, will it not? I know our mouth would probably say Jesus, but does our checkbook, does our Venmo account, does our credit card account agree with that? Is Jesus really our priority? See, God has given us all these things. So let's ask the next question as we continue on. What does he expect of us? Well, I just want to make it very clear. I've probably already said it. He's given us something to invest. So it's very clear he wants us to invest what he's given us into his kingdom. Okay? That's what the parable is telling us. Invest what he's given. I mean, literally says that to the servants. So let's not miss that. Invest what he's given us into his kingdom. Are you investing your time, talents, and treasure to know God more deeply and to make him known to the world? Is that your purpose in life now? If you're his servant, that's what he's telling you to do. Because see, the king returned and he went to each servant to collect what was his. The money was his in the first place. So he gave it to them, told them to invest it and multiply it. And so that means the return that they get on their investment is also his. And then he gives them a reward as a result. But he's coming to get what's his. And when the servants who had obeyed him share their returns, his response to each of them is, well done. And then they get rewards based off of the level of investment that they made. That's interesting. We're not going to talk about that as much today, but I think that's just something to bank away there a little bit. Very interesting. What a gracious master, though, right? I mean, think about it. Not only did he share his wealth with his servants, he didn't have to, but he gave them an opportunity to leverage that gift and be a part of growing his kingdom when he came back. I mean, that's pretty special. that they get to be a part of it, and then they get rewarded as a result of it. But if you're like me, you just kind of get caught up here, and you're like, man, that means I have to earn something for Jesus. That means I have to do more and try harder here so that I can be good enough and I'll make him happy. Or you want to be better than others. You want to get more rewards in the end. And so you got to work harder. Make sure you produce a bigger return. That goes completely against the parable, though, in some sense. I mean, you can invest what you have, but sometimes the returns aren't up to you. They're just up to the stock market. Now, I think there's wisdom, there's counsel that needs to go into that, there's prayer, there's direction, all of those things. But at the end of the day, you don't control the stock market. You simply control the choice that you make as to whether you're going to invest or not, whether you're going to obey the master or not. So what I want you to write down is this. We judge our spiritual resume by success, but Jesus judges it by stewardship. We think success, we got to be more successful. Jesus says, no. I'm just giving this to you to be a steward. That is the success, that you're faithfully stewarding what you've been given. He's saying as long as you do something to invest your faith, no matter how little the return might be in this life, it's enough. It's enough. It's about the stewardship. So the faith to obey the master, not the success, which is the amount of multiplication that might occur as a result of your investment. Now, I think there's a part of that that you're like, yeah, this is great. I want that. But at the end of the day, the idea is that stewardship is more important. I've used this example recently, but I think it's like the thief on the cross next to Jesus. You know, if you think about that, he didn't have any return on his investment of faith. He invested his faith in Jesus at the very last moment and didn't have any return on it other than going to heaven. So there was nothing that he did in this life to earn any more favor. You know, there's nothing that he could do to invest that faith more. And now, if he had lived, sure, we can play the hypothetical game all you want. He would have looked like a different person. He would have lived a different kind of life. But he didn't, because he died. And yet his faith that he did invest, as little as it was enough for him to hear, you'll be with me in paradise today. You see, so the faith was an important part of that. But it was a little bit of faith. I think that's so interesting here. Hebrews 11 tells us what faith is. I thought I'd read this to you. Faith is the reality, or some translations will say the assurance of what's hoped for, the proof or the evidence or the conviction of what's not seen. That means it's an intentional choice that you and I make to put our trust in Jesus. We have a conviction that though we can't fully see it yet, the kingdom hasn't completely come in its fullness yet, yet we believe and trust that Jesus is worthy of our trust. We feel like we can trust him. We've deemed him trustworthy. It's not a blind leap like so many people think. That's not what faith is. It's a hope, yes, but faith is a hope founded on something that we deem trustworthy. That's what faith is. Faith is a hope that we have that we've put in something that we looked at and said, I think that thing is trustworthy. I think I can bank on that. Faith is actually something that we all practice every day, no matter who we are. You put your faith in that chair, that rickety old chair when you sat down today, that really comfortable blue chair. Man, aren't you excited to get rid of those things, huh? You're going to be sitting in some pews over there. I'm not sure how much more comfortable that is, but I'm going to go old school. But you know, you saw that chair when you walked in, and you sat down on it without any previous evidence to say that it would hold you up in some sense, other than the fact that every other chair that you've ever sat in, for the most part, maybe, has held you up, right? So you deemed that thing trustworthy because of the previous knowledge that you had or whatever it might be, but you said, I think that's trustworthy, I deem it trustworthy, so I'm going to put my faith and sit down in that thing. Or with a family member who says that they love you. You know, I can't prove that my wife loves me other than what I know about her and how she's shown me that love over the last 15 years of our marriage. Now, sometimes, you know, she might be able to prove that I don't love her with my actions. I don't know. You know, that's how I feel sometimes. I'm sure she feels it too. But generally speaking, based off of her previous knowledge and what she's seen, she deems me trustworthy. I deem her trustworthy. Although I don't know how that's going to play out into the future. People change. I mean, I don't know. It's yet unseen, but we deem each other trustworthy. Or maybe here's a more solid example. Maybe you're a scientific person, and you say you believe that given time, science is going to reveal the mysteries of the universe to you. You know, because we don't understand it yet, science will figure it out for us eventually. We'll get there. Well, you know what? You're putting your trust in something that you haven't seen yet. You can't prove that that's the case. You don't know that that's true. And yet, because of scientific inquiry, what you believe about it, all the things that you've seen so far, you trust, you deem it trustworthy enough that you're going to put your faith in it. That's how faith works. We all have faith in something that we deem trustworthy. So the question isn't, will you put your faith in something? The question is, what are you putting your faith in? What are you putting your faith in? Because whatever you put your faith in the most is what determines how you invest what you have. You know, I said it earlier, but your faith is only as good as what you put it in. Or to put it in a direct way with the language that we're using in this sermon, you invest in what you trust. That's what faith looks like. So even if it's just a little bit of faith, just so you're only investing just a little tiny bit, it is enough to produce multiplication if the thing that you're trusting in is trustworthy. You think about this. St. Tim Keller helped me grasp this. I heard him say it like this one time. I thought it was really helpful. I hope it helps you. He said that when you go ice skating on a frozen pond, for example, you might have all the faith in the world that the ice is going to hold you up and that you're not going to fall through the ice. Maybe it's your past experience with ice skating on a pond. Maybe it's your own bias. Maybe you're a positive thinker and you just want to think the best. Whatever the case is, if the ice is only a half an inch thick, it doesn't matter how much faith you put in that ice to hold you up. It's just not. You're going to fall right through. Why? Because the ice itself is not trustworthy, and it can't hold you up. But let's say on the flip side, you're terrified to go out on the ice because of your past experiences and your past biases and whatever the case is, why, whatever reasons you have for not trusting it, and you're not willing to go out onto it, even though you see 20 other people out ice skating around, having a good time, and you know that the ice is a foot thick. You see, if you don't have enough faith to take at least one step out onto the ice, then you're never going to experience the joy of ice skating because of your faith, your lack of faith. And the whole thing hinges on two components, you'll notice. The ice, and whether it's trustworthy or not, whether it's going to support your weight, but then also the faith that you have in the ice, whether actually you're willing to put your full weight on it or not. And listen, if you're terrified and you're unsure and you're afraid, but you're willing to just take one little step out onto the ice to test it and then put your weight on it, man, you can slowly begin to move out into the middle where you can begin to ice skate. Just as long as you just have just enough to take that first step. Whoops. You might not have all of the information. You might not know what it's going to bring in the future. You might not know the outcome, and yet you have just enough to take the step. And that's what Jesus is talking about here. I see such a parallel with this parable, but also for me personally, in my walk with Jesus. He says that as long as I have enough faith, the faith of a mustard seed, then I can move mountains. I can say to this tree, this mulberry tree, go here and go out into the middle of the ocean, it'll do it. I mean, these are things that Jesus is saying, like just a little bit can bring some kind of return. If you had just enough to know that I'm a harsh master, then put it in the bank and at least give me a little bit of return. Just a little bit of faith will go a long way. So let me ask you this. What keeps you from investing your faith in the master? Some of us can't even put just that little bit in there. Why not? What is it that keeps you investing your faith in the master? Because we all have something that does that to us. What kept the servant from obeying the master in this parable? Well, it wasn't something, you know, tangible. It was something that he either just misunderstood about the master or he wasn't willing to believe. There was some fear involved there. He either misunderstood the character of the master altogether, which is the excuse that he gives, although I don't think the master's buying that. But I think really what it was he didn't believe that the master was coming back as king. And he didn't believe the master deserved his allegiance and his obedience. It boiled down to his trust or his lack thereof in the master. So here's the problem that we all have, like the wicked servant. We fear that Jesus isn't trustworthy. And I think that's the crux of the issue for so many people who don't want to believe in Jesus. We just fear that he's not trustworthy enough. We fear that if we give our lives over to him, it's not going to be enough for us. It's not going to satisfy us. It's not going to give us joy. It's actually going to hinder things, you know? But it's really interesting. I heard this recently, and I recalled this from The Great Divorce by C.S. Lewis. If you've never read that book, phenomenal book. I need to read the book. It's this idea of getting a glimpse into what it could look like. It's just totally giving us the illustration and the illusory understanding of what heaven and hell could look like. And in hell, you're moving away from other people and you're getting further and further away, more and more alone, and you're going crazy because of it. In heaven, you're going further and further up into the mountains of knowing God and being in his presence, and everything's solid and beautiful and bright. And one part of this, this guy from hell gets to come up and kind of get a glimpse of heaven. That's the idea, so that we can see what it looks like. And there's one guy with a red lizard on his shoulder. And an angel comes up to him and says, hey, you know what? I can get rid of that lizard. And the guy's like, he's complaining about the lizard, this red lizard that's on his shoulder. He doesn't want the red lizard on his shoulder, and it represents lust, as a matter of fact, for him in the book. And he's saying, you know what? I hate this. Man, it's so uncomfortable. It's just whispering in my ear all the time. And the angel comes and says, hey, I can get rid of that if you want me to. And then at that moment, when he's given the choice, he goes, well, do I want to get rid of it? You know? Is that something that I really want? I mean, it's been here, you know, most of my life. I would miss it. I don't know, you know. And then he starts going down this path, and he finally does, just to give it away, he does choose to let the angel get rid of it, but it's hard. And it rips and it hurts. And it doesn't feel good at first, and then he's free. And he's free, and he throws off that weight, and he gets to go further up and further in. And yeah, at first it might hurt, it might not feel good, and yet there's a greater reality that we're reaching for here, but we fear that Jesus isn't trustworthy. We fear that it's not going to produce that in our lives, and it starts with our attitude usually. You can tell. Just look at what makes you anxious or bitter or emotionally lose control of your life. What is that? Because any peace or security that you did have, any joy that you did have, it's going to be taken away from you if you're investing your faith in something other than Jesus. That's the point in the parable. When you invest your faith in something else, whatever Jesus did give you is going to be taken away. So if you had any peace, if you had any security, it's going to be taken away. So when you look at what makes you anxious, or when you look at what makes you frustrated or bitter, what is that? You know, when that money gets low in your bank account, like I said last week, for me personally, you start to freak out, you start to get short with family members, you get very anxious and overwhelmed. Maybe some people start turning to substances or other outlets and other escapes to tamp those worries down. Or when social media posts that you put up doesn't get as many likes as you think it should. You know, it sends you into a tailspin of depression and feeling like nobody loves you and you're an unloved person and you get frustrated and all this. Or when that date that you were on doesn't work out yet again and you don't get to, you know, think about marriage one more time, you just get let down, you start getting bitter and cynical thinking that, man, marriage is just not something God has in the cards for you. You start lusting after that intimacy. You start lusting after that spouse. Or maybe even if you've done all the right things, you've gone to church your whole life, you've done the moral thing, and yet you're still racked with guilt and shame and anxiety and worry, and you're always weighed down by the fact that you don't feel good enough. All of these things can help you see that you know your faith isn't in Jesus in those moments. Your faith's in something else. It affects your emotions and your mood and your joy. And we see in the parable that it doesn't just do that. It goes even deeper because the dissenters here, that delegation, when they came back, what happened? Because they rejected the king. They died. He killed them right in front of him. And you're like, man, that's harsh. Okay, it sounds harsh when you hear that the king had them put to death for just simply not wanting him to be their king. But that's the just punishment for treason. Treason is something that deserves death. They feared his kingship over their lives. They didn't like that he was going to be king. And so they tried to overthrow his kingship before it even began in their lives. We don't get it as Americans because we've thrown off the tyranny of the monarchy. Yes, go America, right? But sometimes that hurts us when we don't understand what true authority should look like. Because listen, they would have understood when they heard this parable, when Jesus was telling the people around him, that when you try to overthrow a rightful king, immediately it's death. Of course it is. What are you talking about? Because it's not just about the king, it's about the kingdom. The king represents all of his people. The king represents the kingdom. So you're not just committing treason against one person who's angry and throwing a temper tantrum. You're committing treason against everybody that you say are your people. It deserves death. Treason. You've betrayed everyone around you in your nation. That's the result of treason, is death. So here's what you can write down about this parable for us. We deserve death for rejecting Jesus as our king. We deserve death for that. And that's the hard part of the gospel for us to get. And yes, it's part of the gospel, right? Part of the gospel is that we all are sinners because we've all rejected Jesus as our king. That's part of the story that Christianity tells us. It's part of the story of the gospel. We reject Jesus as the rightful king over our lives, and that deserves a just punishment. When we trust anything else above him, we're rejecting him as our king. We are committing treason against him and his kingdom. And we're saying, I don't want him to be my king, and I don't want to be a part of his kingdom. And some of you guys might sit here and say, that's what I want. Maybe that's your experience. Listen, I don't think it really is what you want. Because despite the fact that we've done that, here's the good news that we have in the gospel. This gracious master, the God over the universe, the sovereign king that we've committed treason against, he's offered to save us if we'll simply invest our faith in him. That's the beauty of the good news. And some people are like, well, that's too good to be true. That's not how this can work out. But listen, don't you think in your heart, you know that guilt and shame is always there. That you're never good enough, no matter what you do. You never have enough, no matter what you get. There's always this restlessness and this dissatisfaction that you're constantly... Now, I'm not saying Christians don't wrestle with those things, but the reason that we wrestle with it is because we always want to go back to those things that aren't our king. Now, we've pledged our allegiance to Jesus, and whenever we take our eyes off of him, we start to go back down the road of depression and frustration and guilt and shame and all these different things. But when we put our eyes back on him and what he's offering to us, it should give us joy because we know that no matter how imperfect we are, no matter how broken we are, no matter how sinful and deserving of death that we are, this king says that he's willing to come back in to our heart and make us new, bring us back into his kingdom. See, we each want to be our own king and sit on the throne of our own heart and invest our faith in something, really anything that we can except for Jesus. That's usually how it feels, and that's usually what it is. Anything but that. But the very king that we've rejected died a gruesome death on a cross for you and for me so that we could come into his kingdom. Let me ask you, what other king would give his own life for his people like that? What other form of salvation is there that sounds like this? Jesus died the death that you and I deserve because he believed we're worth it. He saw that we were worth it. That's the good news of the gospel. Jesus invested his own life to bring us into his kingdom. This beautiful good news is what we believe as Christians. Not the political good news that you hear on social media. Not the religious hypocrite good news that you hear about having to make sure you look a certain way and act a certain way and make certain choices. Again, I don't want to downplay the fact that you're going to change your life as you grow in faith. I don't want to downplay that. Certainly, it will change you. But what you always have to go to as your litmus test for whether this is real or not in your heart is your faith. Where are you willing to put your faith? That's the key. Have you invested your faith in Jesus? Because he rose from the dead, now we have this assurance about it that we get to raise from the dead with him one day if we put our faith in him. Because he will return as the king victorious over death, the king victorious over our sin. Man, this king is one that we can't possibly imagine how good he is. He brings the kingdom into its fullness here on earth, in reality, in time and space. That's what we're looking forward to. That's the hope that we have as Christians. You might ask, well, how can I be sure? You know, if the assurance is that Jesus rose from the dead, how can I have the assurance? Let me tell you, I've done a lot of historical study on it, and I'm not going to sit up here and try to argue it and say, well, look at X, Y, and Z. Listen, I did that for myself, and what I found, I deemed trustworthy enough to put my faith in and to invest my faith there. You're going to have to do the same thing if that's your story. If you're not a Christian here today and you think that, man, I don't know. I don't know what I think about Jesus. Listen, what you can't do is just ignore him and think that that's not a choice you're making. If you just ignore the reality of it, that's a choice. You're saying, yeah, I don't think it's trustworthy enough. I'm just going to put it off. But with the Christian message, listen, for 2,000 years in human history, and really more if we go back into Israelite history, what it's telling us is that this truth is something that's changed millions and millions, probably billions of people's lives just this year. And certainly countless billions, trillions over human history. And you're sitting there willing to say that you don't really want to wrestle with it. You're not willing to wrestle with it. Now, I'm not trying to be a jerk. I just want to push you on it. If that's where you're at, I want to tell you, you're going to have to study this for yourself. You're going to have to wrestle with God. You're going to have to wrestle with what you deem trustworthy.
And I want to call you to that. I want to encourage you to that. And if you need help with that, man, I'm here. I love to talk about that kind of stuff. I can show you how I came to the conclusions that I came to. Any of our pastors, any of our leaders here would love to talk to you about that. I really promise that. And I won't try to beat you over the head, and I won't try to make you feel stupid, because sometimes I feel stupid. I don't have all the answers. So I want you to know that I'm here for you in that. But I will tell you, now that I have invested my faith in Jesus, I've experienced his trustworthiness over and over and over again in my life. And I wouldn't trade that for anything in the world. I founded my life on this for a reason, because he's been trustworthy. He's shown up. He's changed my life. And I really believe he'll do that in your life too, if you'll put your faith in him, because sometimes we just have to be willing to take that one step. And then once we finally were willing to put our weight on it, then we'll know that it's going to hold us up. Maybe that's where you're at today, and you need to take that step. Let me just ask you, by way of application today for all of us, how are you going to invest your faith in Jesus today? How are you going to invest your faith? Are you willing to do that? First, if you've never trusted in Jesus, I want to encourage you to take a step of faith today if you never have. That's the first thing I want to encourage you to do. Take a step of faith today if you never have. Invest your faith in Jesus, because he is trustworthy. I promise you, he can hold your weight if you'll simply step out with him in faith. Not in religiosity, not in trying to make sure you look a certain way and act like a Christian, but with faith. Are you willing to actually trust him and give your life to him? But then secondly, if you've already taken that step of faith, and you're Jesus follower here, you're one of his servants, even if it's just a little bit of faith, listen, let me encourage you today. Use what God's given you to invest in his kingdom. Use what he's given you. I think we all have everything that we need to obey the master's command today. God's given it to you. Whatever you have in your life right now, you can and should invest in his kingdom and leverage what he's given you for the sake of his mission in the world. He wants to reach other people and bring them into the kingdom with you. That's what he wants for you to do. So how can you invest your time in ways that will help you get to know God more deeply and make him known to those in the world around you? How can you invest your time in that way? I'll tell you, community groups are a vital way to do this here at our church. What you value is what you prioritize. So are you prioritizing getting in community with other believers and doing life with other believers, letting them speak into your life, and then you actively speaking into theirs? If you haven't signed up for a community group yet, make sure you do that before you leave today. We have a regroup going on right now. So you can go out there, sign up for a group, make sure you don't leave here. Invest where it counts. Being in community with other believers is certainly one of those things that we need as Christians, and we need to give our time over to. But what about your talents? How are you investing your talents today? Are you growing God's kingdom and making him known to others? Serving on a regular basis here at our church is a way to do that. But also looking at your job the way that we were talking about earlier. I mean, how are you giving your energy over to the kingdom? Is your energy so that you can have enough money in your bank account so that you're not afraid? Or is your energy for God's kingdom and building it up and sharing the gospel with others and using your talents as a way to glorify God in the world? Not just to share the gospel, although that's important, but to just glorify him through doing good work. We've talked about that in the Proverbs series that we had over the summer. Just glorifying him and what you do is important. So is your energy toward investing in God's kingdom? But then how are you investing your treasure? And this is how we'll end today, because, man, I know that it's hard to give up our money. But you know, like we talked about last week, money does something to our hearts and it can master us. But we're seeing in this parable that Jesus is the one that's supposed to be our master, not money. So start to consider what you need to do to rearrange your priorities and your finances this week. How can you grow God's kingdom? How can you grow closer to God and then bring others into the kingdom with you through your finances? Well, I'll tell you what, he tells us to give things away. And again, we talked about that last week some, but I'll just remind you. Give your money away so that you can destroy that idol in your life. And if you feel like I'm saying just give it here, give it somewhere else. I challenge you. If you're just not willing to give it anywhere, then you got an idol in your heart. But you need to be willing to give your money to God's mission, to know him more and to make him known to others. And since our Commitment Sunday is next week, I do want to end our time by just encouraging you guys to pray about how much God would have you give here. You know, I want to encourage you to pray and ask him to multiply your treasure for the sake of his kingdom here. How much are you able to give toward our whatever it takes initiative that's going to go from now through the end of this year. And this is your first time with us. I want to make sure if you're a guest here, this is not for you, obviously. I want you to see that this is for those of us who call Redemption Church home. But listen, if you do call our church your home, then I want you to take out this commitment card. And if you don't have it, that's okay. I want you to grab this on your way out if you forgot it. But also, we're going to be sending you a packet in the mail this week just to make sure you have everything you need for next Sunday. So you should be getting it in the mail as well. But you'll notice there are two things on this giving card that we're going to fill out and turn in next week. We're going to lay them at our symbolic altar. We're going to respond by giving next week and laying things down for Jesus. But we have two things here. The additional monthly amount that you might want to give and the one-time gift that you might want to give now. I'm going to ask that you just pray about those things. Ask God what he would have you to give. Tamara and I are asking God how to do this. I mean, we give to the upper parts of our comfort level now. So it's going to be hard. We're going to have to give up some things this fall, no doubt. But we're going to pray and ask God. And I've told you, I want to lead you guys in this in generosity because I want you to know I'm invested in the mission here. I want you to know that I'm trying to lead you in generosity as best I can. Our elders, though, we're not asking you to be unwise as you think about giving, but we are asking you to consider what God would have you invest in his kingdom here with us. And I've said this to many of you, but I believe this is a line in the sand kind of moment for our church. I really do. It's not the first one that we've ever had, and it's not the last one that we'll ever have as a church, but right now is one of those moments for us in the history and the life of our church, because on the one hand, we could just keep doing what we're doing and be comfortable. Maybe we'll grow a little bit more, and that's fine. Or we can make ourselves very uncomfortable, and we can learn what it looks like to be a church that's faithful in giving our time, talent, and treasure to God's kingdom. We can learn what it looks like, and we can start as a core group, essentially, giving and living that out in this valley. Because I'll tell you what, there's a ton of churches. This is not a knock against any specific church. It just is the way that it is in America. There's a ton of churches here that are... they're just like cruise ships. They're just like country clubs. They just want to gather as many people as they can, and they want to hunker down, and they want to survive. Well, listen, that's not the kind of church that we are. That's not the kind of church I want to be. I don't care. I mean, I do want to grow the church, but listen, it's got to be a result of you guys having faith in Jesus. If it's not as a result of you investing your faith in him, then we're just not going to grow, and I don't want to grow. I don't want to try to contrive growth. But listen, if you're willing to invest your faith in his kingdom and in what he wants to do through you, then man, you're going to see stories. You're going to see these returns on investment come in people's lives that you never thought possible. You're going to see people get baptized here that you never thought God was going to change. You're going to see some of those stories because you are willing to invest your faith in Jesus, not in something else. And so I hope that you hear that in my heart. That's what I want for our church, and that's the kind of church that I want us to be. And I'm telling you, when we get over to that new building, the temptation is going to be to say, ah, we're here. We've arrived. No, we haven't. That is just the beginning of a new season for us. We're doing that so that we can reach more people, so that you guys have a better tool for investing your faith in the kingdom. That's the only reason we're doing it. We could stay here and save a lot of money, but I don't want to do that. I want to go over there. It's going to cost us, so we got to be willing to invest and go all in, but we got to be willing to invest our faith first. So I hope that that's what you guys see this as, a big moment for us, and come next week prepared to put your faith in Jesus in a very big way as we have Commitment Sunday, and we'll commit together to invest our faith in him because we know that he's trustworthy. We know that this is what he wants for us. Thanks so much for listening with us today. We hope that it was an encouragement to you. But you know, we don't see this as a replacement for gathering with other believers in a local church context. So if you don't have a local church, we would encourage you to plug in with one wherever you are. And if you're in Roanoke, Virginia, we'd love to invite you to plug in with us here at Redemption Church. And you're welcome anytime to gather with us. But you can check us out online at our website, redemptionroanoke.com. You can look for other content or resources there. But thanks again for listening.